Thursday, June 29th on the Ira Kaufman podcast, everybody's favorite podcast. Sorry, Kamish, we just like to say that. We don't really mean it. Presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Those great dealerships present all of Ira's work on JoeBucksFan.com. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Ira, they're challenging all other dealers to give you the lowest payments on a new Cadillac, like a 2017 ATS for only $369 a month, or a 2017 XT5, the crossover, for just $399 a month. The summer sales challenge is on. We are in the middle of summer. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com right now. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. See dealer for all the details. This is a big summer weekend, Ira, to go shopping for cars before July 4th. Fantastic deals at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, general manager Brian Danahy, our friend, is challenging all other dealerships. And when they do that, you win by taking home the lowest prices. Don't miss the Ed Morse Summer Sales Challenge. Drive off in a powerful 2017 Escalade with zero down, only $689 a month. Let us impress you at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. See the dealer for all the details. Best way to start at Ira is your favorite website, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, which is, of course, in a tie with EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com and JoeBucksFan.com and whatever else you visit, Riesling.com.
I got a question Beat from salad. Mr. DeKemper. After hearing this passionate ad by Mr. Isbitz, I got a question. How can they offer better deals on these Cadillacs than I'm paying for my 1974 Gremlin? How can it be a lower payment at Ed Morse Cadillac than I'm paying for my red Gremlin?
Well, it's
unbelievable.
It sounds like you're dealing with class people at Cadillac, and wherever you got the Gremlin from, you got the shaft.
Ira, where you shopped is the kind of lot where they charge you 63% interest and break your knuckles if you don't pay by the 30th.
It was Nutley, New Jersey, your old stomping grounds, Steve.
Nutley, New Jersey, a car loan. Need I say more?
Need you say more.
All right, Ira, a couple things. Everybody listening to the podcast, you can also listen at iTunes if you're not already, podbean.com, joebucksfan.com every Tuesday and Thursday. We've had two episodes in the can with the head coach himself, Dirk Cutter, joining the Ira Kaufman podcast. How cool is that? And we have more of Dirk Cutter today, which all of you know since you saw the headline or the tease wherever you are catching the podcast. Leave a review for the damn podcast. Ira likes these reviews. He likes to study them, memorize them. Even the good ones, the bad ones, all of them.
Man of the people, Steve.
Ira is a man of the people. He'll be pressing the flesh August 5th, stick carrier takeover day, while he covers the Bucks on that training camp morning. He'll also be talking to the people. Ira, you know what? Maybe your column is just on the stick carrier movement that day.
It might be, and, you know, I might spend so much time with the fans, Lee, I might miss a Roberto Aguayo field goal attempt. I don't want to do that because what other camp is focused on a couple of kickers?
This
is crazy.
I honestly have never heard this before as far as...
And the stick carriers will be into it, right, Steve? We'll see that day if these guys kick publicly in front of the stick carriers.
Absolutely. Ira, I still would bet. I would bet money if somebody would take the bet. I still bet that you end up on Hard Knocks somehow. I have no doubt that they...
You know me so well, Steve.
You will be on that show. I have no doubt whatsoever.
Will I be eating a beet salad at $1? What do you think?
If the Glazers provide it,
if they provide it.
A 40% right. chance you have food in your mouth when you're on the air. But I still think you're going to be on the show. Now, Ira, before we get really rolling with Dirk Cutter, you promised everybody in the last podcast a story about the Super Bowl. I don't know the story. Let's hear it.
All right. It's going to take a couple of minutes, Lee, but it's going to be worth it. Here we go. January 2003. Bucks are in the postseason. They got a powerful team. Went 12-4. They played a 49ers first playoff game. I'm not there. I'm in Green Bay. The Trib sent me. The Packers were going to play the Falcons. And this is all an effort to see, hey, if the Bucks keep winning, let's have a beat on one of their opponents. You know what's going to happen. So I went to Lambeau Field, where it snowed at the end of the game. Michael Vick and the Falcons.
Saturday night game, right?
I believe it was a Saturday night game. The Falcons won pretty easily. The Packers were terrible that night. It was the first home playoff loss in Packers history. Mm-hmm. First one. And Vick and the Falcons then went on. I think they got knocked out the following week. Okay. Anyway, so I missed the 49ers game. And then the Bucks play the Eagles. Nobody, with the exception of you two screw-ups, might have thought the Bucks had a shot in hell.
No, I didn't.
No, nobody thought the Bucks could win that game. The Eagles beat them in the regular season. The Eagles beat them in the last two playoff matchups. I'm not sure how many Bucks really felt confident going into that game. Bucks played the game of their life. 27-10, the Rondé pick, this and that. Well, going into the game, Steve, we do the picks, you know, in Sunday's paper. Kaufman's pick, you know, Eagles 23, Bucks 14. All right. After the game, it took forever. Steve, forever to open up the locker room because they're getting the Halas Award for winning the NFC title. It took 45 minutes. We're standing in the hallway. We're freezing. It was 8 degrees that day.
Raucous locker room?
Well, they haven't opened the door yet, so okay. We're standing out there. I'm on the side.
So just to clarify, we're not in Green Bay anymore. Now we've moved on to the NFC Championship game, and you're waiting.
That's right. I'm waiting. And finally, the side door opens. I'm standing by the side door. First guy out, Keyshawn Johnson. He's got a cell phone. He tried to get some reception in the room. He couldn't get it. He was going back on the field so he can make a call on his cell phone. Probably calling his guys out in L.A., you know, hey, we're going to the Super Bowl, lining up tickets, whatever. He opens the door, and I am the first guy that he sees. I'm behind the barricade, you know. And he goes, hey, Kaufman, come on in. They're waiting for you.
Oh.
Oh, boy. I walk in. There, they got me lined up, you know. Here comes Brooks, Sapp, Barber, Rice, Lynch. And I walk in, and they tear me a new one. Yeah, hometown paper, can't even back up, no faith in the hometown. That one's on you, Kaufman. How'd you like that one, 27-10? I took my beating, Isbitz. What am I going to say? All right, now here we go. I believe the Super Bowl was a week later, not 2 weeks later. So I get back from Philly. I'm in Tampa one day, pack a new bag, go out to San Diego. 25 guys the Trib sends out. Oh, what a different story from the Trib 10 years later. But 25 people.
They wouldn't send two guys out.
Steve, photographers, the arts critic, the entertainment critic. What's
Are
going on?
Are you serious?
Oh, oh yeah. Serious. Walt Belcher was out there,
yeah,
I remember.
Kim
yeah,
McCormick, everybody. All right. So Nick Puglisi was running the sports department.
Why wasn't Dave Sommer out there?
The great Nick Puglisi, longtime Bucks beat guy.
Yeah.
When they were bad. And now they're good, and he's not the beat guy anymore. But he was out there, and he was leading the coverage. Steve, we're out there, and like Thursday of that week, you know, we're in the Super Bowl media room. And the teams, you know, from those cities that are in, they have their own little workroom.
Yes.
They don't have to be out there. They got a little wall, you know, curtained in. So the Trib had their curtain in with tables. And Puglisi goes, need you for a minute, Ira. I go in the back. What's up, Nick? He's in front of his computer. He goes, it's time to make picks for the Super Bowl, Ira. It's time to make picks. Okay. So I got his computer screen. He's got 15 sports writers' names down. 15 out of the 25 were sports writers. At the end, the Trib had 6 sports writers, you know, before it folded.
Wow.
So that's the difference. 15 sports writers, Steve. I'm looking. He goes, need your pick for Sunday's game. I say immediately to Puglisi, they just trounced the Eagles and shut down the vet. They can certainly beat the Raiders. I'm going with the Bucks. Response from Puglisi. No, you're not. No, you're not. I said,
what?
I can't make my own pick in the newspaper with my name on it? No, Ira. You got
to
pick the Raiders.
I tell him to go to hell.
He goes, you see these 15 names on this computer? I've already asked 15 people. You're the 16th. All of them have picked the Bucks. If you pick the Bucks, we are going to look like a hometown newspaper, of which I immediately responded, Nick, we are a hometown newspaper. He goes, forget about that. You got to make the Raiders pick so we have some semblance of unbiased. I go, make Joey Knight change his pick. Joey Knight, I think, was covering, you know, U.S. High schools or something. Puglisi's response, nobody knows Joey Knight. They know you.
And that's exactly why.
You must pick the Raiders. Yeah. I go, what do you want me to do, Nick? Raiders 24-17. What do you want me to do? It's in the paper on Sunday. The Bucks get the clips out in San Diego. They're reading all the clips. There goes Kaufman sticking out like a sore thumb. He's picking the Raiders to beat the Bucks. Game over. What do? I get in the elevator, and I go down to the locker room, and here they go. Rondé sees me. Come on in, Kaufman. We're waiting for you again. They tear me another new a-hole. I try to say, Puglisi made me change my pick. Oh, you got to do better than that, Kaufman. We ain't going to believe that. And once again, I take a beating from the guys in the locker room. That is a true story. I've never forgiven Puglisi for not allowing me to make my own pick. The Kemper would have put his foot down.
Oh, I would have.
Too much of a team player, Lee.
You know, I'm going to go.
Are you shocked by such a development?
I am shocked, and it's disgusting.
I'm going to go off on a rant here. People complain about journalism. People that are not in journalism complain about journalism. And my experience, Bucks Media Room, they're appalled how people view the Fourth Estate. Perfect example. We're supposed to have ethics. We're supposed to be honest. We're supposed to be true to the readers. I've been put in similar situations. That is just, I'm sorry, Ed Morse Cadillac. That is just bullshit. That is just bullshit.
That's the first time we've used that word.
Journalism.
On the Kaufman podcast.
I actually got an A in journalism ethics. Ethics means a lot to me. It's like a vow, an oath. What you see and what you write is supposed to be 100% accuracy representative.
And you believe it.
Yes. I mean, I'll give you an example. When I was in college, it was very class, journalism ethics. Very first day, he's going through roll call, the professor. And he comes to my name. Is it D. Kemper or Die Kemper? I said, it's D. Kemper, but I don't care. Dude glared at me. I thought I was going to get punched. He glared at me, and he starts talking through his gritted teeth. Mr. D. Kemper, we're journalists. We
accuracy.
Strive for accuracy. Like, whoa, I got off the wrong foot with this guy. Turned out to be one of my favorite professors.
Well, I guess Professor Puglisi didn't live up to those standards, Mr. Risby.
If Puglisi was pulling those kind of stunts, what else is he pulling? I mean, that is, and of all people, puts an employee, paints him in a corner like you did. And that's another problem I got with editors. Editors are always happy to put, you know, do stuff with the paper and give you marching orders that they don't have to worry about. But the guy with his gumshoe journalism reporter on the sidewalk gets beat up
here
for
I
it.
Finally got a Buck game right, and it turned out wrong in the paper over
that's
there, Steven.
Just, you know,
that's my Super Bowl story, my
what,
man.
What else? What else when he was sports editor was bullshit?
Well, let me
hold
set
on,
a little.
Elizabeth is going to find a way to
punch holes
in this.
No,
there's no way you could defend that.
Let me set the stage a little bit. Lee and I worked for the Tampa Tribune. You know, for a lot of years, I worked on the news side as well, in addition to sports, for 3.5 years.
Fine institution, Stephen.
Not so much anymore. I mean, you tossed this.
Yeah. Continue.
For 3.5 years on the news side and worked years on the sports side as well. And I worked for Nick Puglisi. So did Lee. We were in touch with this guy often on many different subjects. And that story, Ira, is so disgusting and reprehensible. It is disgusting, beyond disgusting, for two reasons. First of all, Puggo, as he's called, Nick Puglisi, who was then sports editor, assistant sports editor in charge of the NFL.
Yeah, deputy sports editor.
Well, he was a former Buccaneers beat writer. If he wanted a clashing opinion, he could have just put his name on the chart.
Bingo.
Nick Puglisi, former Bucks Tribune.
Picking the Raiders, yeah.
Tribune sports editor.
But he'd rather sell you out than himself.
Tribune sports editor, former Bucks beat writer, and put his own name on it. People knew who Nick Puglisi was reading the Trib in the 90s. He covered the Buccaneers. So it's completely disgusting. He's basically asked you to lie.
He told me to take one for the team over there.
That's horse manure.
But what did the team accomplish? What did they accomplish?
What did they accomplish? I took a beating in the locker room. That's what I accomplished.
No, not that. I'm saying what the team.
They took a hit with their readers.
Take one for the team, for the Tribune. What did they accomplish by that? Back then, I'd say, half a million people read the Tribune. Probably all those people probably actually read a lot of the Bucks coverage that week because it was the Super Bowl week. The whole town was talking about it. And they saw Ira Kaufman's name, and they wanted to know what you thought. And you were told you had to lie to them. That's disgusting. That's disgusting.
I told you I had a juicy story, DeCamper, and I backed it up.
And right there, people wonder why. Journalists wonder why the general public looks down upon journalists. Well, there's the perfect example.
Maybe that's one reason Sapp didn't talk to me for a couple of years. He had a lot of reasons, but maybe that was one of them.
There you go. I mean, Puglisi just screwed with your credibility with the players. I mean, to me, that's sacrosanct. A beat reporter has to have a relationship with players, and he's screwing it up.
Not only do I pick against them with the Eagles, which was my pick. I'm not saying they put me up to that one, and I think 90% of Buck fans.
Yeah, no,
they
I understand.
Galicia down at the Palm Beach Post.
Nick's still in the business.
Well, I'm going to openly say, anybody that still subscribes to Palm Beach Post, you have to wonder what kind of
crap you're reading. The Kemper over there.
I'm appalled at that.
It's really appalling.
If you would have had a mistake in any story, Puglisi would have jumped down your throat. Yet he's lying with your name.
I'm going with the Bucks. No, you're not. That was the entirety of the dialogue.
I don't care if Puglisi hears this or not. There's no way you can defend that. And if anybody reads the Palm Beach Post, you've got to ask yourself, what other kind of crap are they shoveling out with him at the helm?
Well, it's true. It's true. And, you know, I understand, Ira, why you
want... That makes us all look freaking bad.
You had to keep your job. You weren't gonna go to the mat over that.
I can't go to the mattresses. What am I, Clemenza?
And frankly, you gave your honest pick, and he changed it. So, I mean, he was going to change it no matter what you had to say anyway. So I got that point.
Real quick story, very similar to yours. I swear to God. When I was first out of college, I covered the Royals in St. Joseph, Missouri, which is kind of like what Bradenton is to Tampa Bay area. During the winter, I would do small colleges like Northwest Missouri State football and basketball and some high schools. And I can't remember what story I wrote. And the editor, the night sports editor, screwed with my quotes so bad. It was inaccurate quotes.
And I'm like, your name's on the
story. My byline's on it. So I tell one of the copy editors, get my byline off that story. He didn't say that. He goes, okay. He took my byline off the story. So when they, you know, that was the first run. So after the first run, you're proofing the stories. And he's like, the sports editor in question, oh, we missed your byline. I said, that's okay. And smart. Because I said, get my byline off there.
Let me close this before we get to Dirk Cutter.
How are you going
to
follow that story?
Well, Steven? Let me close with this. You know, there are a lot of Bucks fans out there who know who What the Buck is, fan club. /podcast run by the same guy for years. He does some good stuff. Years ago, we even used to put his YouTube videos on JoeBucksFan.com. He sort of went on a crusade last season to tell everybody he could that JoeBucksFan.com makes up narratives and has agendas, and all of our things we write about the Doug Martin and the running game is just to fit an agenda. And okay, you know, the guy's saying all kinds of stuff, but he sort of crossed a line. And so I called him out on it. And basically just by saying nicely via messages, hey, look, say what you want. Don't really care how much you criticize JoeBucksFan.com. Do whatever you want. Say whatever you want. But this is totally out of line. Everything we write on JoeBucksFan.com, we believe. I could say we've never written anything just that we don't believe just so people might click on it. And frankly, most people have no clue what people actually click on and what is actually interesting to readers. They have no clue whatsoever. But anyway, so this guy freaks out. And he just couldn't seem to believe that we actually believed what we were writing, which led me to believe, well, maybe he talks and doesn't really believe what he's saying, so he can't believe that other people believe what they say. You know, and it like Lee said about Nick Puglisi, if he's telling you to lie about something, then what else is going on? This happens a lot. And
our guys in the business, I think on Lee on the radio side,
TV specifically,
the TV side, that do say things I swear they don't believe what they're saying.
Yeah, anybody with any comments.
And I think you can tell. You can tell.
Yeah. So it was a lot of internet nonsense going on, but that was really crossed the line. That was a recent thing. And eventually, What the Buck on his podcast explained that, hey, I talked to Joe Bucks fan. They believe everything that they're saying. I just think they're idiots. And
you can disagree.
Okay. And I'm fine with that. But don't start saying that we're making up stuff, because it's really just never happened. Why would we? I mean, our opinions are so glamorous and interesting anyway.
I've been called an idiot all my life. It ain't going to stop if I quit covering
football. I've slapped you guys around on your own website.
I got to tell you this. I know myself, and I know Lee to a point. This Puglisi thing has me completely shaken.
We work for the guy.
It's disgusting. I wanted to say this before we get to Cutter. Lee mentioned earlier in the discussion about the reporters going out to San Diego for the Super Bowl. He mentioned jokingly Dave Summer. Was in the news. Dave Summer worked for the Trib for many years. He was found dead in his house in Safety Harbor. A guy Lee and I knew quite well. I had been to his house. This was just last week. As when we cut this podcast, is still under investigation.
Seems like foul play, right?
Seems like it could be, but we don't know. And he was a guy 110% committed to ethics. Now, you'll enjoy this, Ira.
Yes.
Because, of course, I walk into the newsroom, and I'm like, 15 years younger than Dave, or what, close to it. And I walk in there, and he's like, who the hell is this guy? And he's just all over my case. He's telling me, that's not news. You can't write that. You can't pitch that.
Who's your source?
You're not a trained journalist, was his favorite thing to say to me. you don't have a journalism degree. I can't believe they hired you. He's all over my ass 24/7 on stuff. Granted, a lot of what he was saying wasn't valid.
But years later, you have an appreciation for
it. But we got along, and he was somebody who would have, if Summer knew that, he would have gone to the editor of the paper and said.
Oh, yes, he would have.
He would have marched right to
what are you doing?
Every editor he could find and say, this is appalling, this is disgusting, and so it really sad stuff.
And I could tell this sad about, stuff. You know, Dave, you know, rest his soul, it's sad however he came to his end, it's sad. And anyway, Dave, what Steve was saying, Dave was suspicious of Steve for maybe 6 months. And after about 6 months, he was envious of Steve. He was like always asking me on the side, like, how's he coming up with these stories? It's amazing how he comes up with these stories. They're good stories. And so Steve won him over. And to win over Dave, you really had to do something. Dave was hard to impress.
When you're going
to
win me over is, but
I don't know. But
when he cuts you another check, right?
After about 6 months, Summer comes up to me. He's like, you're working too hard. You're ruining, it for all
of us.
I'm never going to get a damn raise.
Wow.
You know, it's just
he did say that.
That's outstanding.
He complained that Steve and I worked too hard, made him look bad.
Good guy in the business. Good guy in the business.
A lot of great stories there. All right. We have.
Let's move on, baby.
We've either exhilarated our listeners, captivated them, or bored them. But that's what fast forward is for in a podcast if you don't like a subject. So now we're getting right to Dirk Cutter. Ira asked him a question about spreading the ball around, touches, what does that mean?
Dirk, we've talked a lot about weapons. It's been a heck of an offseason for you and Jason. But, Dirk, is there a real concern, or am I overstating it, that you got a lot of talented targets for Jameis, and you got to keep everybody happy, or in the end you're going to say everybody's going to get their touches? Is that a concern?
Yeah, I've just found over the years that if you're winning, everything takes care of itself. All right, the only time touches and targets become an issue is when your team's struggling. Then it becomes an issue. Everyone's going to play along fine when you're winning, and we plan on winning. So as a coach, I don't think you can worry about that. You can't. What coach would get up there and say, we have too many good players? I mean, that's the plan, get more good players. Now, how do you keep them all happy? Well, put together a team and a system that has a chance to win every week. And, you know, if you don't win, I'm not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy. You guys aren't going to be happy.
So, Ira, there's Dirk Cutter on touches. Guys getting touches and what that means and the potential diva situation is sort of what you were alluding to there. I thought it was fascinating that Cutter admitted, yeah, there are problems when you're losing. That becomes an issue. He very easily could have said, Ira, we don't have those kinds of players on this team.
Beautiful answer, Lee. Beautiful answer. And by that, I mean, hey, some other coach would say, you're making stuff up. There's no way that's ever going to be a factor on this football team. We got high character. Guys, Cutter doesn't do that. You know, he's incapable of that kind of naivete, Lee. What does he say? As long as we win, we're going to be okay. We can control these things. It's not going to be a big problem. I agree with that. There are some guys out there, and I don't think the Bucs have one, but in the past, I think there are guys, even if the team was winning, that they didn't, and I think the Bucs used to have a receiver like that.
Well, we know they did.
And if he's not getting his touches, you're going to have a problem, even if the team is winning. But I don't see it on this current Buck team. What's the other side of that coin? If we're not doing well, Lee, you got problems. And it brings up a line that you've heard about sports, and I think John Madden said it, among many unbelievable things, insightful things that Madden said. Winning is the great antiseptic. Or, your problems go on the back burner, the backbiting that, is going to happen because you're dealing with 53 personalities.
Wait a minute. Backbiting? Wasn't that Marv Albert?
Oh. See, Isvitz is on form right here. Because, that story about Puglisi, I got him all riled up now. Now he's on sharp as a tack. But, Lee, great answer by Cutter. Win, these problems are minimal. Lose, look out.
Well, you know what? I like Jameis' answer even better. Not that I don't like Dirk's. Dirk's was great. I like Jameis' answer to that very same question. He said, I don't discriminate. Get open.
You're not going to say that you can't say that Brate and Howard and Jackson and Evans are all going to catch 66 passes. It's not going to break down like that, Steve. But Howard's not going to say anything because he's a rookie. And Brate's a Harvard man, so he's going to clam up. But Steve, if the
what
Bucks,
are you insinuating there? Steve, if yell the Bucks, men clam up.
If the Bucks are 3-5 and DeSean Jackson's got 2 touchdown catches, there might be a little brush fire. I don't think that's outrageous to think.
I accidentally said Brate was Yale. Forgive me. It was
Steve,
Harvard.
Am I wrong? Am I reading too much into this?
Well, you're the man who wrote a whole column that DeSean Jackson's a diva.
In the diva category.
And it's about time we got a diva, and divas do what divas do. it's an interesting subject. I think what's important is, how does this affect Cutter, the play caller? Can Cutter really go into this and say, you know what, I don't care about the names on the jerseys, as Lee likes to say, it's about matchups. And you know what, if we only go deep, take one shot to Deshaun all game, we hit it, miss it, whatever.
The best game plan for that game, right, Steve? That's what it comes
exactly
down to.
Exactly. The problems come in is if you have bad personalities or you have a coach who plays to them too much to try to keep everybody happy. You can't coach football like that.
That's a good point. Coddles them, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, or feels he has to balance it out somehow. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Cutter is smart and calculating and will do that to get guys going. You know, last year, if you go look at that Atlanta game, there was a watch that opening game of the season. There was a clear effort to get Austin Seferian Jenkins involved very early in that game, and they did. And
because they saw a matchup advantage.
They saw a matchup, but I think part of that is Cutter knowing, you know what, if ASJ is on this season, if we can get him going, we can win a lot of games and get him engaged after he got kicked out of OTAs and after Jameis screamed him down in front of hundreds of people and two different teams in Jacksonville, we can get him going. And they did. And then he went out and partied and celebrated and
helped them win the game.
And he had to take a huge dump in the back of a cruiser. Now, that's not the way they wanted it to end. But, you know, it's a balance. It was an interesting answer by Cutter.
You know, one interesting thing about divas, Lee, to look at it from their perspective.
Bette Midler, Taylor Swift.
Bette Midler.
They genuinely believe, right or wrong, that the path to victory is putting the ball in their hands. That's genuine. They really think that's the way that team should win.
By the way,
we got to make that point.
When you referred earlier to, there was a certain wide receiver that when the Bucs were winning, he might have still been whining, but it was okay until he started losing. Was it number 19? I think it goes without saying.
I don't think there's a great mystery. I don't think we need to hold a contest to name that Buck. I think the facts speak for themselves. It was a guy who...
He's a good guy.
It was a guy who was told to stay home a year later with the Bucs.
Just say it, Kaufman.
Stay home, baby.
What the hell?
Stay home.
In recent years, there was hard video evidence of Kellen Winslow, Mr. Vaseline.
Mr. Target parking lot?
Hanging his head and not celebrating after Preston Parker caught a key touchdown. I think that was 2011.
Vincent Jackson last year at Atlanta.
When the Bucs went to 4-2, Vincent Jackson's been caught on video not celebrating, hanging his head after a touchdown. I believe it was Charles Sims' magnetic touchdown run in Atlanta. Jackson walking away, hanging his head.
Walked right by him, like someone shot his dog.
It was bizarre. I leave open the possibility that sometimes a guy might be hurt. You know, tweak something on a play, and he's just, you know, walking it off a little bit. But those two guys had a history.
One example of how a diva receiver, and I will now name him, how a diva receiver can get in a coach's head was... In the 2003 season, which was a bitter disappointment for Buck fans, trying to defend a Super Bowl title, and the Bucs finished 7-9, correct? 7-9 with Gruden's second season. There was a game out at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. The Bucs got beaten bad. I think it might have been 24-7. Late in the game, and this is confirmed, late in the game, Gruden and all the starters were out, you know, and it was garbage time. Gruden sought out number 19 on the sidelines and said, quote, "You want to go back in and pad your statistics?" Question mark. That is confirmed. When a coach says that to a particular player, do we need to say anymore?
Wow.
That says it all.
Gruden's also the same guy who told everybody who could listen that he couldn't figure out how to get Antonio Bryant and Joey Galloway on the field at the same time.
The X, the Z.
Because they played the same position. It's like, come on, John, you're supposed to be
the coach,
a mastermind.
You're the offensive guru.
You can't find a way to stretch the field with Joey Galloway on one side going deep. I mean, it was the most stupid. Anyway, enough of that. Kaufman, last topic for today's podcast. It's come up in the news. Lee's written about it. It's been talked about for centuries, and obviously you've been around for centuries, so that's a good thing. Tanking. Tanking's back in the news with the Jets tanking on the season by collecting an assortment of crappy talent, which they're going to pay to meet the league minimums. And what's your take on this?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I've never heard of an NFL team tank before. 2 months before the season started. You usually tank when you're 2-7. Yeah. You tank, and your fan base understands. Before the season? Lee, you're trying to get season ticket buyers to buy suite sales? Are you kidding me? What the heck is going on at East Rutherford?
Oh, it's pretty obvious. They're going for the first round. They're going for a quarterback. They're going to get a quarterback to save the franchise.
I hear that there is a quarterback out of Southern Cal. I just heard this the other day, who seems legit. Maybe a notch below Andrew Luck as prospect, but a lot better than the prospects that were just in the 2017 draft. And maybe that's the guy that now, unlike the NBA, Lee, under current rules, if you got the worst record in the NFL, you get the first pick.
Yeah,
but I still think to tank in June and July with some of your personnel moves is outrageous.
Well, I would suggest they began in March when they signed Josh McCown. Plain and simple. Savvy front offices and fans, most fans, they see the benefit. And they, okay, you know, we're going to be on this continuous dog chasing its tail without a quarterback unless something drastic happens. Or you go and overpay for a Cody Kessler, for example. And look at the Browns.
No shot in the division with the Patriots. No
there
shot.
You go. There you go. So they know that this is the only way it's going to happen. So, you know, get rid of the dead weight. Get rid of the expensive contracts. Tank. You'll be better off for it. You'll have 10 years, maybe more, of success. That's the way to go. In the locker room, remember when the Bucks were marching toward the chase for Jameis, I always call it, the chase for Jameis. And I remember Altron Werner. He wasn't the only one, of course, but I remember Altron Werner. People asked him about, hey, losing the last game, you're going to get Jameis Winston. He's like, I don't care. Well, you think we care about the draft? We want to win. We're professionals. So coaches don't like to hear it. Players hate it.
That's a great point by DeKemper. Players are not in on tanking at all.
No.
This is all an organizational
that's their reputation.
Thing. Players are not thinking about tanking, Steve.
No, they're not thinking about tanking, but I'll leave it open that some players might be. You know, if you're a great receiver and you know that you're going to be here a while and you're...
They got to put stuff on tape, Steve.
But like Steve said, if they're signed,
well, if
they're going to be around a while.
If you're a receiver and you know your team's tanking a little to get a quarterback, you might be pretty happy about that if your quarterback sucks. So it depends on the position, but sure, 90% of the players have no interest in tanking, mostly because they're being graded by the rest of the NFL every time they step on that field. It affects their career. What makes the whole thing interesting in the NFL is that tanking isn't necessarily a panacea for anything, unlike it might be with the number one or two pick in the NBA, where it's going to get you that guy who's much more of a slam dunk than a number
five players on the court. There's a big difference.
Sam Bowie.
Much more of a slam dunk than an NBA.
But Steve,
than
a franchise quarterback, Steve. A franchise quarterback.
Well, like Steve said, how do you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. But okay, take your franchise quarterbacks over the last 15 years, your top 10 picks. How many
you're
are
right.
good? So
you're right.
It's a little bit different.
If you think you got an Andrew Luck out there, Steve, then you kind of you do understand.
Yeah, there's
the
a
point.
Bunch of quarterbacks out there. You got I can't think of his name. Oklahoma. There's
Mayfield.
This guy from Washington Mayfield. State that's supposed to be so good. There's a bunch of them out there that potentially could be a franchise.
But like Steve
says,
a lot of busts.
Yeah,
no
and a lot of guys
it.
Also like Sam Bradford, who okay, was number one pick.
He's okay,
but that's not what you're going for.
Yeah.
If you're tanking, you're not envisioning Sam Bradford joining your team.
I don't remember other teams making moves like this, like the Jets, this early. That shows
you could argue the Browns.
I agree with Lee. The moment that Lovie Smith named Josh McCown the starter here, you could argue they were tanking.
Interesting.
In 2014.
Now, the Browns, I always say she because he has a woman's name, the general manager of the Browns. It escapes me now. But every time I hear that name, they hired a woman for GM.
Sasha.
Sounds like some backup singer for, I don't know, Bruno Mars or something. No. Sasha. No. But anyway, they had at least confessed in the middle of the season, in November, like, well, we're not concerned about wins.
Steve, you know, interesting point you made, finally. You made an interesting point. 2014, you're suggesting the McCown. Now, the McCown thing was ridiculous. And here come the Jets, you know, 4 years later. Here we go again.
Well, how about the Browns hiring him?
Steve, that was Jason Light's first year as a general manager. So I'm trying to think about the mindset. I know Jameis Winston and Mariota are out there on the board potentially in the 2015 draft, but Steve, is that the way you want to start your first year as a general manager, thinking you're going to go 3-13? That's a tough pill to swallow, Lee.
Well, shoot, they had quarterbacks they could have drafted that year. Carr was in the second round. I mean, who knows? You know, everybody, Steve and I were all on board for Johnny Football, and to this day, fans like, see what happened. You don't know anything about the draft.
And Bridgewater, we always wrote that Bridgewater was.
So that was the year they took Mike Evans, right?
Mike Evans. But who's to say if Manziel went somewhere else, he wouldn't have melted down? We all remember when Joe Bucks fan first started out, how I was beyond vehemently against drafting Josh Freeman. I was proven right. But at any rate,
you didn't look so good at the end of the 2010 season.
No, I ate my words, and then, oops, look what happened.
Ira, short answer, we don't need to go too deep. Lee's against the lottery system in the NFL, thinks it's stupid. I like it. What do you think? Draft lottery.
As an anti-tanking measure, if tanking disgusts you, which I think it does, because I'm a Sixers fan, this process is taking forever, and you know they've tanked for 3 or 4 years. If you're going to tank, cut the season, the price of the tickets down, because you're not putting a representative team out.
And that's a fair point.
So, Steve, with that regard, where you're not guaranteed to get the first pick, if you're that bad, I kind of like it. I hate to say it, but I'm with his bits on this, Steve. I'm with his bits.
And you didn't have to take notes.
Lee, where are you on this?
I'm off for the tank.
You're all for the tank.
You went to your dramatic whispering there.
I don't want people to think. Maybe they don't hear it. You know.
I'm all for the tanking, because you know what? By tanking, you're improving your organization for years forward. If you draft pick right.
But you're asking a lot out of your fan base, too.
Well, I think your educated fans know that, hey, okay, we might really stink this year, but down the road we have a chance to be very good, as opposed to being 4-12 schlock.
And let's remind our listeners, Steve, that the Bucks promptly went 0-8 at home that season. 0-8. Didn't win a home game.
Sure. Two tiny little nuggets. I think in part the Jets, you know, we live here in Tampa. The Jets are right next door and have heard all about what's going on in Philly with the intentional tanking of the 76ers for years now. So I think it's more of an accepted process in the Northeast, because people know about tanking. It's not like here where that's a big deal and has been for years. Been all kinds of ESPN, the magazine, features written on it and all kinds of stuff. So I think it's a little bit more accepted up there for one thing. And last question, in your man cave, Ira, where you have your Bette Midler poster and your Barbara Streisand portrait, is there a Jeff Ruland poster in there? Is that with your Sixers love? Is that
must you remind me of sad days in Sixer history? There's a hex on that franchise. That's all I'm going to say. It starts with Andrew Bynum. These injuries, unbelievable. Ben Simmons never had an injury in his life. The last exhibition game. This is the number one pick in the draft. Everybody's excited in Philly last year. We've got to see this kid. He's 6'9". He's the next Magic Johnson. He didn't play one game.
Really?
He didn't play 1 minute for the Sixers. Then they got this guy Embiid, who's the real deal. Mm-hmm. When he played last year, he looked spectacular.
Let me translate for
Lee. He gets hurt.
Lee, looks like you're speaking Chinese.
Yeah, I understand.
Simmons is the J.R. Sweezy.
I've heard of Ben Simmons. He's LSU,
the
right?
He's
the J.R. Sweezy of Philadelphia.
So. Listen to that. So anyway, they call it the process, Steve. All I know is there's a lot of processes that haven't taken this long. You can make sausages. That's a process, but you churn those out in about 3 minutes.
Quickly about tanking, Bucks related, and I wrote about this on JoeBucksFan.com. 2006 season. Bucks lose a coin flip to Cleveland because they beat Cleveland in their last win of the season to go 4-12. Because of that coin flip, and more importantly, because of that win, they picked fourth in the draft. The first overall pick, Jamarcus Russell, Oakland. That was obviously a surprise. Bucks needed a left tackle. Joe Thomas was out there. Bucks needed the wide receiver. Calvin Johnson was out there. What did Detroit do? Draft Calvin Johnson. What did Cleveland do with the number three spot? They drafted Joe Thomas.
What did the Bucks do?
Gaines Adams. So that vital win the Bucks just had to have cost him a Hall of Famer.
Quite a way to close the podcast, my man.
Quite a way. We got more podcasts next week, Tuesday and Thursday. Kaufman, get out of here. We're sick of you already. Great story. We have to compliment you on your stories.
We got more Dirk Cutter next week. Steve, more Dirk Cutter?
More of head coach Dirk Cutter on the Ira Kaufman podcast next week.